Welcome back, listeners, to Sandman Stories Presents, a folklore podcast where I read you to sleep or until the next story. I'm your host, Dustin. Today we are back in the Book of Bengal Folklore, written down by Lal Bahari Day. In today's story, we will learn about Swet Basanta. There are a couple words I want you to know before we get into the story. An almira is a closet or wardrobe. Kataks are professional marriage brokers. A manik is a great jewel of incomparable beauty. And a howdah is a fancy seat for riding elephants. Please don't ride elephants. The son is named Mosi. His sons are named Swet and Basanta, and Mosi's first bride is Ashapurna. Mosi's second bride is Tanisha. Swet's wife is named Punit, and originally these characters did not have names, but I wanted to give them names so they'd have slightly more depth. So I went through and picked out some Bengali women's names. A little bit of a trigger warning. One character contemplates ending their life, and another one contemplates sexual violence. So just a little heads up for that. Okay, let's begin. The Story of Swet Basanta. There was a rich merchant who had only one son, Mosi, whom he loved passionately. He gave Mosi whatever he wanted. He was not yet 10 years old, but his wish was his father's command. His son asked for a beautiful house in the midst of a large garden. When the house was built for him, the grounds were laid out into a fine garden. As the merchant's son was walking in his garden, he put his hand into the nest of a small bird called a tuntuni, and he found an egg, which he took and put in an almira, which was dug into the wall of the house. He closed the door of the closet and thought no more of the egg. Though the merchant's son had a house of his own, he had no kitchen. At any rate, he kept no cook, for his mother used to send regularly his breakfast and dinner every day. The egg which he deposited in the closet burst one day, and out of it came a beautiful infant girl. The merchant's son knew nothing about it. He had forgotten everything about the egg, and the door of the closet had been kept closed, though not locked, ever since the day that he put the egg there. The child grew up within the closet, without the knowledge of the merchant's son or of anyone else. When the child could walk, she had the curiosity one day to open the door, and seeing some food on the floor, the breakfast of the merchant's son sent by his mother, she came out and ate a little of it and returned to her cell in the almira. As the mother of the merchant's son always sent him more than he could eat, he did not notice a few nibbles missing out of his meal. The girl of the closet used to come out every day and eat part of the food, and after eating used to return to her place in the almira. But as the girl got older and older, she began to eat more and more. Thus the merchant's son began to notice his food shrinking. Not dreaming of the existence of the closet girl, he wondered if his mother had sent him such a small quantity of food. He sent word to his mother, complaining of the meager meals, and of the slovenly manner in which the food was served on the dish, for the girl of the closet used to finger the rice, curry, and other food, and as she always hurried back to the closet unseen, she had no time to put the rice and other things into their proper order after she had eaten a part of them. The mother was astonished by her son's complaint, for she always gave him a much larger quantity than she knew he could consume, and the food was served up on a silver plate, decorated neatly by her own hand. But as her son repeated the same complaint day after day, she began to suspect something was amiss. She told her son to watch and see whether anyone ate part of it without being seen. Accordingly, one day, when the servant brought the breakfast and laid it on a clean place on the floor, the merchant's son, instead of going to bathe as his hitherto had been his custom, he hid himself in a secret place and began to watch. In a few minutes he saw the door of the closet open. A beautiful damsel of sweet 21 stepped out of it, sat on the carpet spread before the breakfast, and began to eat. The merchant's son came out of his hiding place, and the damsel could not escape. "Who are you, beautiful woman? You do not seem to be earth-born." "Are you one of the daughters of the gods?" asked the merchant's son. The girl replied, "I do not know who I am. I know that one day I found myself in yonder almira and have been ever since living in it." Mosi thought it strange, He remembered now that years before he had put in the Almira an egg he had found in the nest of the Tuntuni bird. The uncommon beauty of the closet girl made a deep impression on the mind of the merchant's son, and he resolved in his mind to marry her. The girl, who chose the name Ashpurna, no longer went into the Almira, but lived in one of the rooms of the spacious house of the merchant's son. The next day, Mosi sent word to his mother to the effect that he would like to get married. His mother reproached herself for not having prepared for her son's married life, and sent a message to the effect that she and his father would send Gataks far and wide the next day to seek for a suitable bride. Mosi sent word that he had secured for himself a most lovable young lady, and that if his parents had no objections, he would produce her before them. Accordingly, Ashapurna was taken to the merchant's house, and the merchant and his wife were so struck with the matchless grace, beauty, and intelligence of the stranger that, without asking any questions as to her birth, the nuptials were celebrated. In course of time, the couple had two sons, the elder named Swet, and the younger, Basanta. The old merchant died, and so did his wife. Swet and Basanta grew up to be fine lads, and the elder was in due time married. Sometime after Swet's marriage, his mother, Ashapurna, also died, and the widower lost no time in marrying the young and insecure wife named Tanisha. As Swet's wife, Punit was older than her new stepmother. Punit became the mistress of the house. Tanisha, like all stepmothers, hated Swet and Basanta with a perfect hatred, and the two ladies were naturally often at loggerheads with each other. It so happened one day that a fisherman brought Mosi a fish of singular beauty. It was unlike any other fish that he had seen. The fish had marvelous qualities ascribed to it by the fisherman. If anyone eats it, he said, when he laughs, monyx will fall from his mouth, and when he weeps, pearls will drop from his eyes. Mosi, hearing of the wonderful properties of the fish, bought it for 1,000 rupees, and put it into the hands of Punit, who was the mistress of the house, strictly enjoining on her to cook it well and give it to him alone to eat. Punit, who had overheard the conversation between her father-in-law and the fisherman, secretly resolved in her mind to give the cooked fish to her husband and to his brother to eat, and to instead give to her father-in-law a frog daintily cooked. When she had finished cooking both the fish and the frog, she heard a squabble between her stepmother-in-law and her husband's brother. It appears that Basanta, who was only a lad, was passionately fond of pigeons, which he tamed. One of these pigeons had flown into the room of Tanisha, who had hid it in her clothes. Basanta rushed into the room and loudly demanded the pigeon. His stepmother denied any knowledge of the pigeon, on which the elder brother, Swet, forcibly took out the bird from her clothes and gave it to his brother. Tanisha cursed and swore and added, "Wait, when the head of the house comes home, I will make him shed both of your bloods before I give him water to drink." Punit called her husband and said to him, "My dearest lord, that woman is a most wicked woman and has boundless influence over my father-in-law. She will make him do what she has threatened. Our life is in imminent danger. Let us first eat a little and let us all three run away from this place." Swet forthwith called Basanta to him and told him what he had heard from his wife. They resolved to run away before nightfall. Punit placed before her husband and her brother-in-law the fish of the wonderful properties, and they ate of it heartily. The woman packed up all of her jewels in a box. As there was only one horse, and it was of uncommon fleetness, the three sat upon it. Swet held the reins, Punit sat in the middle with the jewel box in her lap, and Basanta brought up the rear. The horse galloped with the utmost swiftness. They passed through many a plain and many a noted town, till after midnight they found themselves in the forest, not far from the banks of a river. Here, the most untoward event took place. Punit began to feel the pains of childbirth. They dismounted, and in an hour or two, she gave birth to a son. What were the two brothers to do in this forest? A fire must be kindled to give heat to the mother and the newborn baby. But where was the fire to be got? There were no human habitations visible. Still, fire must be procured, and it was the month of December, or else both the mother and the baby would certainly perish. Swet told Basanta to sit beside Punit, while he set out in the darkness of the night in search of fire. Swet walked many miles into the darkness. Still he saw no human habitations. At last, the genial light of Sukra, known to us as Venus, somewhat illuminated his path, and he saw at a distance what seemed like a large city. He was congratulating himself on his journey's end and on his being able to obtain fire for the benefit of his poor wife lying cold in the forest with the newborn babe, when on a sudden, an elephant gorgeously caparisoned shot across his path and gently taking him up by his trunk, placed him on the rich howdah on its back. It then walked rapidly towards the city. Sweat was quite taken aback. He did not understand the meaning of the elephant's actions and wondered what was in store for him. A crown was in store for him. In that kingdom, the chief city of which he was approaching, a king was elected every morning, for the king of the previous day was always found dead in the morning in the room of the queen. What caused the death of the king, no one knew, neither did the queen herself know the cause, and the elephant who took hold of Sweat was the king maker. Early in the morning it went about, sometimes to distant places, and whosoever was brought back on its back was acknowledged king by the people. The elephant majestically marched through the crowded streets of the city, amid the acclamations of the people, the meaning of which Sweat did not understand, entered the palace and placed him on the throne. He was proclaimed king among the rejoicings of some and the lamentations of others. In the course of the day, he heard of the strange fatality which overtook the elected king of those realms every night. But being possessed of great discretion and courage, he took precaution to avert the dreadful catastrophe. Yet he hardly knew what expedients to adopt, as he was unacquainted with the nature of the danger. He resolved, however, upon these two things, and these were to go armed into the queen's bedchamber and to sit up awake the whole night. The queen was young and of exquisite beauty, and so guileless and benevolent was the expression on her face that it was impossible from looking at her to suppose that she could use any foul means of taking away the life of her knightly consort. In the queen's chamber, Sweat spent a very agreeable evening. As the night advanced, the queen fell asleep, but Sweat kept awake and was on the alert, looking at every creak and corner of the room and expecting every minute to be murdered. In the dead of the night, he perceived something like a thread coming out of the left nostril of the queen. The thread was so thin that it was almost invisible. As he watched it, he found it to be several yards long, yet it was still coming out. When the whole of it had come out, it began to grow thick, and in a few minutes it assumed the form of a huge serpent. In a moment, Sweat cut off the head of the serpent, the body of which wriggled violently. He sat quiet in the room, expecting other adventures, but nothing else happened. The queen slept longer than usual, as she had been relieved of a huge snake which had made her stomach its den. Early next morning, the ministers came, expecting as usual to hear of the king's death. But when the ladies of the bedchamber knocked at the door of the queen, they were astonished to see Sweat come out. It was then known to all the people how every night a terrible snake issued forth from the queen's nostrils, how it devoured the king every night, and how it had at last been killed by the fortunate Sweat. The whole country rejoiced in the prospect of a permanent king. It is a strange thing, nevertheless, it is true, that Sweat did not remember his poor wife with the newborn baby lying in the forest, nor his brother attending to her. With the possession of the throne, he seemed to forget every bit of his past. Basanta, to whom his brother had entrusted his wife and child, sat watching for many a weary hour, expecting every moment to see Sweat return with fire. The whole night passed away without his return. At sunrise, he went to the bank of a river which was close by, and anxiously looked about for his brother, but in vain. Distressed beyond measure, he sat on the riverside and wept. A boat was passing by, in which a merchant was returning to his country. As the boat was not far from the shore, the merchant saw Basanta weeping, and what struck the merchant's attention was the heap of what looked like pearls near the weeping man. At the request of the merchant, the boatman took his vessel towards the bank. The merchant went to the weeping man and found that there was a heap of real pearls of the finest luster, and what astonished him most of all was that that heap was increasing every second, for the teardrops that were falling from his eyes fell to the ground not as tears, but as pearls. The merchant stowed away the heap of pearls into his boat, and with the help of his servants, caught a hold of Basanta himself, put him on board the vessel, and tied him to a post. Basanta, of course, resisted, but what could he do against so many? Thinking of his brother's wife, and the baby, and his own captivity, Basanta wept more bitterly than before, which mightily pleased the merchant. As the more tears his captive shed, the richer he became. When the merchant reached his hometown, he locked Basanta in a room, and at regular hours every day berated him in order to make him shed tears, every one of which was converted into a bright pearl. The merchant one day said to his servants, "As the fellow is making me rich by his weeping, let us see what he gives me by laughing." Accordingly, he began to tickle his captive, on which Basanta laughed, and he laughed a great many monics dropped from his mouth. After this, poor Basanta was alternately whipped and tickled all the day and far into the night, and the merchant, in consequence, became the wealthiest man in the land. Leaving Basanta subjected to the alternate processes of castigation and titillation, let us attend to the fortunes of the poor Punit, alone in the forest, with child just born. She named him Felu. Punit, apparently deserted by her husband and her brother-in-law, was overwhelmed with grief. A woman, but a few hours after the delivery of a child, of her first child, alone and in the forest, far from the habitations of men, her case was indeed pitiable. She wept rivers of tears. Excessive grief, however, brought her relief. She fell asleep with a newborn fellow in her arms. It so happened that at that hour, the Kotwal, the chief of the police, of the country was passing that way. He had been very unfortunate with regards to his offspring. Every child his wife presented him with died shortly after birth, and he was now going to bury the last infant on the banks of the river. As he was going, he saw a woman sleeping with a baby in her arms in the forest. It was a lively and beautiful boy. The Kotwal coveted the lovely infant. He quietly picked Felu up, put in place of it his own dead child, and returning home told his wife that the child had not really died and was revived. When she awoke, Punit, unaware of the deceit practiced upon her by the Kotwal, found her Felu dead. One might imagine her pain after losing her husband, brother-in-law, and most of all her baby. The whole world became dark to her. She was distracted with grief, and in her distraction, she formed the resolution of leaving this world. The river was not far from the spot, and she wanted to drown herself in it. She took in her hand the bundle of jewels and proceeded to the riverside. An old Brahmin was nearby, performing his morning washing up. He noticed a woman going into the water, and naturally thought that she was going to bathe. But when he saw her go far into the deep waters, some suspicion arose in his mind. Discontinuing his devotions, he shouted out and ordered the woman to come to him. Punit, seeing that it was an old man that was calling to her, retraced her steps and came to him. On being asked what she was about to do, she said that she was going to make an end of herself, and that as she had some jewels with her, she would be obliged if he would accept them as a present. At the request of the old Brahmin, she related to him her whole story. The upshot was that she was prevented from drowning herself, and that she was received into the Brahmin's family, where she was treated by the Brahmin's wife as her own daughter. Years passed on. The reputed son of the Kotwal grew up as a vigorous, robust lad. As the house of the old Brahmin was not far from the Kotwal's, Felu used to bump into the handsome strange woman who had passed for the Brahmin's daughter. The lad liked the woman and wanted to marry her. He spoke to his father about the woman, and the father spoke to the Brahmin. The Brahmin's rage knew no bounds. What? The infidel Kotwal's son aspiring to the hand of the Brahmin's daughter? An ant may as well aspire to catch hold of the moon. But the Kotwal's son was determined to have her by force. With this wicked object, he had one day scaled the wall that encompassed the Brahmin's house and got upon the thatched roof of the Brahmin's cowhouse. While he was getting adjusted in his lofty position, he heard the following conversation between two calves in the cowhouse.
"Men accuse us of brutish ignorance and immorality, but in my opinion, men are 50 times worse."
"What makes you say so, brother? Have you witnessed any instance of human depravity today?"
"Who can be a greater monster of crime than the same lad who is at this moment standing on the thatched roof of this hut over our head?"
"Why, I thought it was only the son of our Kotwal, and I never heard that he was exceptionally vicious."
You never heard, but now you hear from me. This wicked lad is now wishing to get married to his own mother.
The first calf then related to the inquisitive second calf in the full story of Sweat and Basanta, and how they and Puneet fled from the vengeance of their stepmother, how Puneet was delivered of a child in the forest by the riverside, how Sweat was made king by the elephant, and how he succeeded in killing the serpent which issued out of the queen's nostrils. How Basanta was carried away by the merchant, confined in a dungeon, and alternately flogged and tickled for pearls and monyx. How the Kotwal exchanged his dead child for Felu. How Puneet was prevented from drowning herself in the river by the Brahmin. How she was received into the Brahmin's family and treated as his daughter. How Felu grew up to be a hardy, lusty youth, and fell in love with her. And how in that very moment he was intent in accomplishing his brutal object. Felu listened to the whole story from the thatched roof of the cow house and was struck with horror. He forthwith got down from the thatch and went home and told his father that he must have an interview with the king. Despite his father's protestations to the contrary, he had an interview with the king, to whom he repeated the whole story as he had overheard it from the thatch of the cow house. The king now remembered his Puneet's case. She was brought from the house of the Brahmin, whom he richly rewarded, and put her in her proper position as the queen of the kingdom. The reputed son of the Kotwal was acknowledged as his own son, and proclaimed the heir apparent to the throne. Basanta was brought out of the dungeon, and the wicked merchant who had maltreated him was buried alive in the earth surrounded with thorns. After this, Sweat, Puneet, Felu, and Basanta lived together happily for many years. Now my story endeth. The Nadia thorn withereth, etc. The End. Whew, that was a whole story. I had to add some names because many people were known by who they were in relation to the other characters, so-and-so's wife, so-and-so's daughter, that sort of thing, and it kind of tripped me up, especially since there was three layers of family in there. Grandfather, father, son, all that stuff. Also, there was some stuff about finding the egg and being only 16, while the guy who found the egg was already an adult. It set off my Sean alarm from Reddit on Wiki. That gap was way too wild. But I liked the magic fish and the idea of the guy being beaten and tickled. It was kind of strange. And the podcast shout-out is to the Fairy Folk. That's F-A-E-R-I-E, folk. If you love local folklore in the UK, this podcast is for you. Although the releases are sporadic, each episode is to be cherished and listened to again and again. And if you like your show as much as I do, go and give her a like, a rating, and a review. And the listener shout-out is to Rabat, Morocco. I don't have a personal connection aside from wanting to live there, so here is Google's quick rundown of the city. Rabat, Morocco's capital, rests along the shores of the Bourguignon River and the Atlantic Ocean. It's known for landmarks that speak to its Islamic and French colonial heritage, including the Kasbah of the Udayas. This Amazigh-era royal fort is surrounded by formal French-designed gardens that overlooks the ocean. The city's iconic Hassan Tower, a 12th-century minaret, soars above the ruins of the mosque. Of course, I would love to visit there someday. Just looking at the map gave me a few holiday ideas. So, I say to my listeners in Rabat, I say, Aleph Shukran, and Tisbalakhir. Thank you, and good night.